I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like, have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with something, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Hello and welcome back to On the Continent Football Chat with a European flavour. I'm Luke Moore.
And I'm Andy Brassel.
Andy, how are you?
Well, obviously, I'm still thinking of ways that I can say my name at the top of the show that will annoy you. I'm not sure if that worked this week, but you know, I'm just trying something different every week and eventually it will work.
No, just mix it up. That's what I say. I, for one, although I concede that I am in no way, I have no way been dealt the toughest hand by this pandemic. I completely understand and I am self-aware enough to realise that. But at the same time, I am getting pretty bored of sitting in a little box room talking into a mic and spending so much time on my own. So hopefully it won't be forever. But we're bearing up okay apart from that, aren't we? You're doing all right, aren't you?
Yeah, absolutely. And your cats will miss you when you go back to the studio. So, you know, let's not run before we can walk.
Yeah, that's true. They spend, obviously, in the summer, though, they spend a lot of time outside. So they probably won't even notice for a good while. As long as there's food in their bowl, mate, that's all they care about. All right, coming up on today's episode of OTC, we've got Spain and our friend Javier Tebas. A really fascinating story coming out of Netherlands. I'm looking forward to getting Andy's take on that. And we will, of course, discuss the latest round of games in the Bundesliga. But first, we have some frankly astonishing news from France. We have witnessed one of the rarest, most exotic beasts here on OTC over the last few days. So do make sure you're sitting down. Andy Brassel, my esteemed friend and colleague, was wrong about something in French football. Andy, I want to give you a right to reply in just a minute, but despite us having a great amount of fun at AVB's expense, he has now decided to have a day off from being football's Phileas Fogg and announced he's going to stay at Marseille to compete with them in the Champions League next season. And if he completes next season with them, he will equal his own record for length of time stayed at a club, which is a colossal 2 seasons. Andy, there are still questions to be answered here because he has, lest we forget, turned down a contract extension. But after a discussion with President Ero and his squad, who pretty much all want him to stay and love working with him, yes, he has decided to take them into next season. But we have FFP to think about, the status of some of his key players. What do you make of this? And will you be starting with an apology after you misled the public on the last episode?
Well, I don't think I will be starting with an apology because I think it was a reasonable calculation. I believe that's this week's nomenclature.
Oh, you're starting to sound like one of them, mate. You're starting to sound like one of them.
No. But you're beginning to sound like a Marseille fan on the internet, actually, badgering journalists. Yeah, it's a surprise. There's no doubt about it. But we talked last week about what the timing would be, really, because there was a sort of holding pattern in which the optics were super important, both for André Villas-Boas and notably for the president, Jacques-Henri Hérault. Now, part of this, with the players having convinced him to stay at least for the moment, is there's talk of Hérault's dressing room ban being extended, because we might remember from last week that Dimitri Payet had banished him from the dressing room. So that will perhaps be extended. I mean, goodness knows what sort of shape they're going to arrive in next season in. It'll be absolutely fascinating to find out. Of course, we're going to find out.
Has anyone seen any photos of Payet? Has he done a proper like Antonio Cassano?
Yeah, he looks amazing. Like, of all the players who've gone crazy in lockdown and let it all grow, Payet looks one of the most au naturel out there. He looks excellent.
Okay.
He's been wasting all that money on sort of high range futuristic haircuts all these years, it turns out.
Yeah. But he's got a propensity to be a bit, I mean, you know, this is the pot calling the kettle black, and I am, apologies, the sound quality goes down because I am very much in a giant glass house here. But he has got a propensity to put on the beef a little bit, hasn't he?
Oh no, it's more that he looks like sort of slightly unkempt. Actually, there's no suggestion that he's been eating 4 packets of Jaffa cakes a day or anything like that. But he looks people might have seen pictures of Roberto Firmino in his first couple of days training back at Liverpool, in which he looks fantastic. You know, I think it's one of the most endearing things, I think, when I think Ryan Hun said about how post-pandemic haircuts of Premier League footballers are the great leveller in modern society.
Big time.
I would agree with that. I think it's absolutely fantastic. But do you know what? Right, if I was someone with Arsenal or St Etienne sympathies listening to this, I wouldn't be interested in hearing any more about Dimitri Payet's haircut or how André Villas-Boas has just poked me in the eye or any of that stuff. I'd be interested in hearing about William Saliba, who, of course, is an Arsenal player and has been since July last year, and presumably will be shuffling his way belatedly to North London in the next little while. He's completing a loan spell at his original team, Saint-Étienne, still only 19 years old, of course. But Saint-Étienne are a bit anxious about how it's going to end. Not, of course, because The loan contract will expire and they'll still have games to play because the French League has been cancelled. But they've still got something, a little speck in the distance, which is the Coupe de France final against Paris Saint-Germain. And that has been slated perhaps happening in August or as a sort of curtain raiser for next season. Now, of course, they'd need Arsenal's assent to carry him forth. But there's a really interesting little caveat to this. Basically, when they signed the deal, they got paid 25 million euros by Arsenal for Saliba. They got to keep him for a year under what can only be described as a really, really stringent loan contract, where Arsenal wanted to make sure he'd play regularly and not just ride the bench. It was he had to play 30 games. That was in the loan contract. Arsenal had a veto of him playing more than one game a week because they wanted to look after him. They've been monitoring him really closely the whole way.
This is quite Byzantine, isn't it? I mean, they'd be tying themselves up in knots, making sure they do it all properly.
Arsenal tying themselves up in knots? I don't believe it. And he had a few little injuries this season, which cut the possible games he could play. So anyway, they've come to an agreement on how many games it would be. I think it's 18 games he's got to play. Anyway, bottom line, they're one game short. That game is the Coupe de France final. And if he reaches that point, they get another bonus of 2.5 million euros. Now, quite why they would let him stay there so he can play the cup final and they, for the privilege of risking their player in a big game, get to pay St. Etienne another 2.5 million euros, I'm not quite sure. But that's what St. Etienne are hoping for at the moment, because obviously the money is quite a big deal to them.
Yeah, and it's not the easiest sell, is it? So I don't imagine they'll be preparing for success. All I will say though, Andy, is that it's a good job I didn't send him on loan to Schalke, because if they had done, he'd probably end up playing up front, wouldn't he? And that leads me nicely on. I think our listeners will be watching that William Saliba story kind of unfold with interest. And actually,
Luke, please don't go back. It's the segue of all segues.
I throw them away, mate. I just throw them away. I'm a renegade. I'm not a presenter. I'm just a loudmouth. But what it does actually throw up is quite an interesting situation, because what Arsenal fans are probably, maybe they haven't, maybe I've misread the room here, but as I've said to you before, the room I'm sat in, I've been on my own for 2.5 months, so I can be forgiven for misreading it, is that Arsenal have signed a really exciting young centre-back here. And I think it might have been a little bit forgotten, and particularly of all the stuff that's been happening over the last couple of months, and the fact that Arsenal have needed a really good, strong centre-back for quite a long time. It is something that will remind the fans, at least, and actually remind English football, that there is a really exciting, talented, strong young centre-back coming to the Premier League, who looks like, based on some of the quotes I've read from Claude Puel, that he actually might be ready to make an impact in the Premier League already.
Yeah, I think that's wholly possible. And I think if you look at players from similar sort of backgrounds, actually, I'm thinking of Leon Goretzka before he arrived at Schalke, for example. I mean, he played a year in the second tier at Bochum, where we were just a couple of short months ago, fighting against relegation in that season. And, you know, I know some people think, if you're going from one situation to another, the first situation maybe has no relevance in terms of future experience. I'm not sure that always is the case. I mean, in the case of Saliba, obviously he's been playing top division football to a very high standard, and he's been excellent when he's played for most of this season. And his absences, I think, are at least one of the reasons why St. Etienne have struggled so badly this season. But I do think going through that tough stuff as a teenager can definitely help mould you. And I think that is to Arsenal's advantage, almost, the fact that St. Etienne have struggled this season.
Yeah.
All right, let's cross over to Germany then, because there were even more football matches happening over in that amazing country midweek. Bayern Munich beat Borussia Dortmund at the Westfalenstadion thanks to a beautifully executed chip from Joshua Kimmich, which everyone just about agrees that Roman Bürki probably should have done better with. Now, I know I'm going to get pulled up on this, my opinion on Bürki a bit later on from Andy, so look forward to that.
Are you sure you don't want to do that line a second time because you enjoyed it so much the first time?
Nevertheless, I'm carrying on. I am carrying on. Nevertheless, it was a lovely goal and worth winning the Clásico. It puts Bayern in a pretty imperious position, 7 points clear. And crucially, Andy, a situation they've been in time and time again. And despite the odd environment, everyone is playing competitive football at the moment. It's very hard to see them not win their eighth title in a row now. Andy, I know that's something you agree with because I saw you write pretty much the same thing in your Guardian column yesterday. So I don't think Borussia Dortmund were bad. I thought they did okay. I agree with what Mats Hummels said. He said they played well, but we were good, but just fell a little short. That's probably probably a fair assessment. But I was really happy, actually, as just as a spectator, with the intensity the game was played in. And I find myself almost not even remembering there was no fans there, which is a remarkable thing to say, given the environment those games are normally played in, particularly in Dortmund.
Yeah, that's the key, isn't it? That the players created the intensity. And I thought it was a great spectacle, particularly in the first half. I do have a little bit of sympathy for Lucien Favre because obviously post-match he's come under the microscope again. Can Dortmund get it done in terms of the big games that win trophies? And is it possible to win the league under Lucien Favre? Because he's fallen short at the last with Hertha before. They didn't get it done at the end of last season. And this nearly man tag is sort of sticking to him like he's a Swiss Ranieri. And it's kind of a little unfair, I think, in this situation because...
Sounds like a sex move, by the way.
I think it's a little unfair because if you look at the changes he implemented at halftime, I mean, they were reasonable changes. If you look at like the fact that he threw on Jadon Sancho and Emre Can to try and force the game, I think those were changes that you could in most contexts reasonably expect would change the game.
Andy, the changes he made overall, I mean, if you look at the five players that he brought on, Götze, Witzel, Can, Reina and Sancho, I mean, that's a very, very strong bench to introduce to a game.
Yeah, I mean, there are two ways of looking at that, Luke, aren't there? The fact that he's got much better resources than anyone else in the division apart from Bayern, or the fact that he brought on Can and Sancho to change the game, and it did change the game. Dortmund were way less intense after the break because those guys weren't fit, and that is a huge problem. I know it sounds a bit excuse making to talk about fitness concerns, but they are lacking a lot of players at the moment. Obviously, Dan Axel Zagadou, Marco Reus being the big one. But the fact that Sancho and Can, who's been outstanding since he's arrived in 2020, and he's the sort of player who Dortmund think will be pushing them over the hump, that he wasn't able to do that was hugely influential in the game. And while Bayern toughed it out excellently, I thought they were brilliantly organised. I think you look at the grit, the coherence, and just the aggression they've got under Hansi Flick. I think it's excellent. I think you have to cut Lucien Favre a little bit of slack here. Now, it was interesting because directly after the game, he talked to Sky, and it's something we've spoken about before when... we've said how he's sort of picked at a little bit for, in inverted commas, the French-Swiss way that he speaks German, really, by German media. And he said to Sky directly afterwards, and he was put a bit on the spot by the reporter, and I was saying, are you this guy who just, you know, can't win titles, basically, in the Bundesliga? And he said, well, look, I know people have said that, and I know some people think that, I'm not going to talk about it now. We'll look at it in a couple of weeks. And so this was immediately taken as he's going to consider his future in the next couple of weeks. So he had to come out and clarify it. Now, that maybe is German's a little bit clunky at times, but I felt at the time that a little bit too much was being read into it. And he came out and clarified on Wednesday on Sky. I've got a contract. I want to see it out. I like it here. His contract runs till June 2021. But it was hilarious that on Sky Germany, it went straight to Lothar Matthäus. Matthäus went, right, he's leaving. So Kovac is going to be their coach next year. That seems like a good hire to me. You're like, whoa, whoa, what happened there? That was a bit quick.
Matthäus is mad though, isn't he? He's just quite mad. But Andy, it does. I mean, I want to talk a bit about Berkey, but I'm happy to talk a bit about Favre instead. I mean,
I want you to be happy as well, please.
Yeah, well, I look. What do you want? Do you want Berkey or do you want Favre?
You know what? I'm not sure.
They're going to be equally as uninformed. So take your pick.
I'm not sure we separate the two actually, because okay. As I said in my Guardian piece that you were referencing before, is that the feeling that you get after rewatching that Kimmich goal, and it was interesting hearing Kimmich and Müller and Hansi Flick talking about it afterwards. And they all said Hansi Flick had telegraphed it. He said, look at the way Berkey positions himself, a little bit off his line. You know, maybe if you wanted to have a go. I don't think anyone really thought the opportunity would fall to Kimmich or that he would execute it so brilliantly. And I don't think we should take anything away from his goal. But there's just something that clings to you with that goal that It's Dortmund in microcosm, really. It's Lucien Favre in microcosm at Dortmund, in that, well, yeah, it'll be a little bit disappointing. It's not a terrible mistake, but, you know, is it where
Dortmund... I think it does show you the difference between the two sides.
Exactly. Is it where Dortmund are? They're very good, but not quite elite when it comes to a game like this. I mean, that's the feeling that you get, isn't it?
My feeling on the goal itself is that I would be absolutely astonished if Joshua Kimmich and indeed the whole Bayern team hadn't studied Roman Berkey's starting position and really identified that as a place that as something that could be exploited. And obviously it turned out to be Kimmich doing it. I mean, if you want to sort of draw your own conclusions about what a defensive midfield player is doing that, then, I mean, fair enough, but he's an exceptional player and he was one of the best fullbacks in the world before he was playing in midfield. So, I mean, it's not a huge surprise that he's technically proficient enough to do that. But secondly, with Berkey, I don't watch him anywhere near as much as many people listening will, but I do watch him enough to know that he doesn't inspire confidence. And it got me thinking as to why that is. And I was reading some stuff by David Priest, who has featured on Football Ramble Daily before. He's an ex-professional excellent goalkeeper, now a coach, and a really insightful pundit, particularly when it comes to goalkeeping. And he was talking about Gigi Buffon. And what I hope I'm not paraphrasing him or putting words in his mouth, but he was essentially saying that the reason Buffon's been able to last as long as he has is because of his just absolutely brutal mastery of the basics and his attention to detail and his passion for just working on those basics over and over again. Now, the fact that he's an outstanding athlete and a brilliant servant to the clubs he's played for and the longevity of his career is a testament to how well he keeps himself in condition and no small amount of talent over and above that. But the mastery of the basics is really important. And I think if you look at Berkey's starting position there, I think his basics are all wrong. You look at the way he goes for the ball as well, but arguably his wrong hand, it's all wrong. And he doesn't inspire confidence because his basics aren't good enough at the very top level. And if you go into transition into a point about Favre, and feel free to shoot me down on this, but for a manager, he's at a very, very big club at a very, very opportunistic time for a manager who effectively has won absolutely nothing in his entire career. And he's not a young man. I mean, he's in his 60s now. Mm. And I know he's done a decent job at Hertha. He's out sort of batted his average at Hertha.
Gladbach,
And then he did well at Gladbach for a while. I get all that. But Dortmund have to ask themselves a pretty serious question, I think. And that is just that, do you think that you can actually break this monopoly, which effectively it is at the top of the Bundesliga? Bayern Munich are about to win their eighth league title in a row. Do you break that with a manager who really, I don't want to sound overly harsh, but really doesn't really know how to win? And it's a really important point. I think he's won, what's he won, a couple of Swiss League championships? That's pretty much it. And that does count for something at the very top level. I don't know what you think about that or whether you think that comes across as a bit harsh, Andy, but
no,
it
I think
really
it's
did strike it as stark, the difference between the two sides, and that's part of the reason.
It's a question that needs to be asked, and especially when you get so close and can't quite push it over the top. You know, this is not the same discussion that you have after they get beaten 4-0 at the Allianz Arena. This is a totally different question because you look at the two games Bayern have lost under Hansi Flick, at home to Leverkusen and away at Borussia Mönchengladbach, who are both very good sides and Champions League contenders. So if not quite in the title conversation, in the same sort of ballpark in that top five at the Bundesliga who've cut themselves away, Dortmund were better than either of those, but still not quite good enough to win this game. And we know that Leverkusen and Gladbach had their fortune in winning those two games. But I think that's something that you've got to look at. And Favre is a question that the club are going to have to discuss at the end of the season. This isn't a new thing. There have been two, maybe even three points earlier in the season where they've fallen short and you think, is he really the coach to take them to the next level? I think there have been several occasions this season where it's gone right, where you've thought, is this the players rather than him? Are they doing this despite him rather than because of him? They've seemed a little bit fettered by his philosophy, which can be a little cautious at times and is certainly at odds with a lot of the players that they've got on the books. But yeah, I think it's totally a question they've got to ask. I mean, basically, we can talk about Sancho and Haaland and Gio Reyna and Torgan Hazard and all those players that excite us. But those players, plus Hazard, Brandt, etc., they're very Dortmund signings, aren't they? Whereas when you get to bringing Mats Hummels back on a lot of money, when you get to signing Emre Can and actually attracting him from Juventus because he's an established top player and a guy who wants to win, you don't buy those guys to stand pat. You don't buy guys to be that cute little club, do you? You buy those guys to win. So yeah, we know which way they're focused. But I think you talked about Mateus saying crazy things, but the Kovac point is actually worth throwing into discussion, not because I think he'd be a good appointment for Dortmund, but I think this directly affects Lucien Favre's future. Who's out there? Who's out there who can do better? Now, that's why Kovac ended up staying at Bayern at the start of this season, because at the time they decided there wasn't anyone out there. Now, I don't think Dortmund can really find their Hansi Flick, you know, someone who's brought in as an assistant, almost undermining the coach, you know, just in case it goes wrong, we've got a guy who's ready made to take over. And also, I don't think Bayern could have imagined for a second just how good Hansi Flick would have been when he took over, because bear in mind, they've given him an extended contract now. And that definitely wasn't the plan at the beginning. He was like a safe pair of hands if they had to take the nuclear option and get rid of Kovac after they did when they lost 5-1 at Eintracht Frankfurt in November, which seems about a million years ago now. I think there's a good chance that if they can't get someone who they think would be an improvement on Favre, they stick with him.
Yeah. I mean, I know the initial kind of reaction from some will be that, you know, well, Hansi Flick hasn't won anything either. And it's a bit like, well, it's a different situation because he spent, his career path has been vastly different. He spent a long time as the assistant to Yogi Löw, who in that Germany side have been very successful. And also, I mean, look, he's won 88% of his games. So it's very much a case of so far, so good. And I suspect this time next month, he will have won his first trophy and it'll be the Bundesliga. So it's but something, Luke, that Lucien Favre's never won.
It's not just that. I think with Bayern, it always has to be about the journey as well as the destination. Because as you've said, they're heading for an 8 successive Bundesliga title. They've looked the real deal in the Champions League this season. Now, some will say, well, one of those was the 7-2 at Tottenham under Kovac. Well, that showed that the players were there, and that showed that on any given night, even when they weren't incredible, actually, they weren't 7-2 kind of good. You know, it can all click into gear and they can put all their chances away. The way they played at Chelsea in the first leg of the last 16 was excellent. But it is the style with which they've played. It's the way in which the players have applied themselves. It's the fact that he's got more and more out of Thomas Müller, who never got on with Kovac. And at various times, even Pep Guardiola didn't really know how to use. It's the fact that he's commanded the respect of those big players, that he's solved a load of positional conundrums. I mean, you've got Alphonso Davies obviously coming in and looking like a world-beating left-back.
He's been a revelation.
When he arrived as a winger. That in turn has meant David Alaba playing as a centre-back, where he's been brilliant. And something that our friend Kevin Hatchard pointed out to me, he said one of the most fascinating things about there being no crowd is you hear who the shouters are in the team. And that Alaba talks through the whole game is something that he found really impressive. And
mate, did you see how hard David Alaba smacked Joshua Kimmich around the head after he scored? Absolutely brutal. Like, it was way over the line, from, in my opinion. I mean, I thought poor Joshua didn't know what to do.
He's been wrestled a few times at that stadium. Do you remember where he had his on-pitch coaching from Pep Guardiola after that 0-0 draw a few years back? Yeah. He's been grabbed around the cheeks like he was a little Nathan Redmond.
let's just do a quick line, because Andy, listeners will not be surprised to know that you and I do speak on WhatsApp as well as once a week on this show. And you sent me one about Schalke. You sent me a WhatsApp the other day saying, and I'm just going to read it verbatim, "Schalke are a bit like the UK cabinet at the moment. Each week you think they can't do worse than the last, and yet they find a way." And that was sent before they capitulated against Fortuna last night. And although a few German football heads have been sympathetic to Schalke's injury plight, they've also been a bit confused as to Wagner's team selection since the restart. They've looked awful since everyone came back. And last night he resorted to chucking a 6'5" centre-back up front at one stage, as I mentioned or alluded to earlier. It doesn't look good for them, does it? They are sinking like an absolute stone.
Yeah, Luke, it's not just the bit that he ended up playing with towering centre-back Salif Sané up front. It's the fact that he made a substitution to make it happen. So this was the point, I think, where he lost quite a few Schalke fans, David Wagner.
The old Stuart Pearce.
Yeah. The fact that he took off Rabbi Matondo, who intermittently had looked very good and I think has been really had a bit too much pressure put on him since he arrived in Germany, because he took that route from Manchester City to the Bundesliga. People expect him to be Jadon Sancho. You can't be Jadon Sancho. He's an exceptional talent. And Matondo is a 19-year-old with a lot of ability who's developing, but developing at a more normal rate. Anyway, he was hooked for a defender, Jean-Claire Todibo, who's on loan from Barcelona. And obviously, at this point, fans are thinking, what on earth is going on here? But then Wagner's, aha, but I've got this up my sleeve. And just, you know, a lot of British managers would be absolutely ridiculed for that, wouldn't they? Sticking a 6'5" centre-back up front. Yeah. Who, as it transpired, won loads of great flick-ons to no one, because Matondo and Daniel Caligiuri, their best player, had been hooked by then. I mean, Wagner's got a huge problem, I think. And, you know, you look at the Hinrunde, the return round of the Bundesliga. Statistically, they are the worst team in it over those 11 games. They've got a goal difference of minus 19. They've scored 3 goals during that time. And one of them, once it put them 1-0 up at Fortuna Düsseldorf, who I think Uwe Rösler's done a really good job there, and the performances have been better than the results so far, and they're still in with a fighting chance of getting themselves out of relegation trouble. You've got to have your foot on the throat after that, and instead they gave away 2 cheap goals from free kicks. Now, when Wagner was talking post-match, he was saying, well, look at the goals we conceded, almost saying, well, you know, I can't be blamed for that. But almost worse than that, I thought, was the tactics. I mean, because they've been leaking goals for fun, they just played really, really defensively against a team who are the lowest scorers in the Bundesliga, who lost 2 big goal scorers at the start of the season in Dodi Lukebakio, who went back to his parent club, Watford, who then sold him to Hertha, and then Benito Rahman, who went to Schalke. And you looked like half an hour into the game, and Fortuna had 78% possession. I mean,
yeah, they absolutely dominated the ball throughout the game, really.
With the best will in the world, they're not Barcelona, are they? And, you know, I think you got to the end of the game and Schalke had like 35% of the ball. Now, they've got a bigger wage bill than Fortuna. They've got better resources. They've got better players. I understand they've got injuries at the moment, but show some guts and try and win the game. Yeah. I think this is the point where Wagner has really started to lose the fan base. That's the concern, and maybe started to lose the club, because the confidence going out the team is plain to see. But when people talk about, you know, coaches losing the dressing room, I think what's more concerning here is that Wagner has started to lose his confidence and started to make some really bad decisions. We know there's some natural leveling out after the first half of the season because the squad's not amazing. But if you look at the fact that some of the decisions he's made since they've come back, like when he made his two attacking substitutions at Dortmund at half-time, which we spoke about a week or two ago, where it just allowed them to be picked off on the counter-attack so easily. It played into Dortmund's hands, and he should know that better than most. And then this, after what happened against Augsburg at the weekend, it's hard to see how much longer it can go on.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Are you struggling to find something to watch during lockdown? You've drained Netflix, rewatched all your old favourites, and now you need something new? Well, we're here to help. Join us for Clash of the Titles, the podcast where two movies with something in common go head-to-head in a fight to the death.
Release the Kraken.
Well, not death. We just decide which one is better.
When they do a long shot of the crowd in the Ivory Tower, it's different to the close-up. And if you look closely, you can see E.T., Mickey Mouse, Chewbacca, Ewoks, and C-3PO.
So when Wolfgang Peterson went to Spielberg and went, could you maybe re-edit my movie? Steven Spielberg went, yeah. Do you know what I'm probably going to cut out? E-f***ing tea, mate.
I made that.
Find your new favourite movie or revisit an old classic with me, Alex Zane, Vicky Crompton and Chris Tilley. New episodes out every Monday and Thursday.
Clash of the Titles is a Stakhanov production.
Okay, now for the latest missive in our soon-to-be award-winning series called This Is When Football Is Coming Back in This Country. We turn to Spain because Javier Tebas appeared on Movistar's hashtag Back to Win show, which is a lovely name for a TV show, earlier this week. And the current working plan, as we've said actually over the last few weeks, that Tebas has been pretty open in what he wants to do, and he's tried to really lead the narrative for better or worse. He's been out there trying to fight the fight, and he said the current working plan is for La Liga to return with a big Seville derby on Thursday, June the 11th, and the rest of the fixtures would obviously follow that weekend. He also said they need to finalise it with the Spanish High Sports Council, and that players won't be training in full groups until today. That's Thursday, 28th of May, as we record now. On the subject of kickoff time, something that we've discussed a number of weeks ago now because of the temperatures in Spain throughout the summer, Tebas said that we'd be seeing some pretty late kickoffs, particularly in the hottest parts of the country. I'll quote him here. He said, "Our plan for kickoff times during the week would be to play in the afternoon or evening between 7:30, 8 p.m. or 9:30, 10 p.m. I love the fact that it's so Spanish to call 7:30 p.m. afternoon. Over the weekend, there will be three slots, 5 p.m. That's just for teams in the north, though, of course, 7:30 and 9:30 or 10 p.m. Now, Andy, before I get your thoughts on this, something that came to mind grabbed my attention relating to La Liga and Spanish football coming back in the country is from our friend Dermot Corrigan, a previous writer for Football Ramble back in the day and a friend of the show. He tweeted saying that... saying the following: La Liga statement on playing Mondays points out again that Spanish football accounts for 1.37% of the country's GDP, generates 185,000 jobs, and pays over 4 billion euros in tax each year. Now, the reason I bring that to the table is just because it's a bit of extra information around the debate about whether football is important, in quotes, or whether it should come back, and what's sort of the priority. Now, of course, the priority is the health and safety of everyone concerned, but also it is valid to make statements like that to say that, you know, this is actually very important for not just the mental well-being and for the entertainment of the country, but also the economy of the country as well. And that has to be a factor. I don't think it has to be a factor over above the health and safety of the citizens, but it is a factor nonetheless, isn't it?
It is a factor, but I think Javier Tebas is laying it on a little bit thick here, and I think he's using the opportunity to try and bring back Monday games, which of course had been negotiated out of forthcoming seasons when we go back to
before. It's a bit of a land grab, you think?
The pandemic. Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And I think they're definitely trying to put themselves in a position where they can say, this has worked for us going forward. I mean, the fact that whether they play on Mondays or not has absolutely no relation, really, to how much of the economy it makes up. We understand that football's coming back. But this idea that football has to be on every waking moment, I would like to think that if this situation that has affected the lives of everyone around the world has taught us one thing, it's like football is really nice to have. Do we need it every single day? I realise they're trying to get stuff done by a certain point, but this to me feels like, right, okay, now the Bundesliga's had its turn, so now we want to take over television all over the world. And what we're going to do is we're going to do that by being omnipresent. So I understand that there's an economic imperative, and maybe that profile is part of it to reinflate the Spanish football economy. But I personally think that we've had a few bits of mail in the Ramble inbox that have concurred with this. You know how we think that things should maybe be different going forward in all aspects of life. I'd like to think that, you know, maybe we don't need football at like actual matches every single day, because when Javier Tebas was talking about that when he was putting together the plan, I thought, oh, well, he probably means football content every single day. He doesn't mean matches every single day. It turns out he probably does mean matches every single day. And I wonder if that's a little bit much. Of course, as you say, until the Spanish High Sports Council gets together, we won't know the exact schedule. Before confirming the schedule that they've put in place, they have to get the agreement. Part of that, it looks like, the idea that there was going to be 5 p.m. slots for games in the north of the country, that seems to be off the table now. The earliest games can kick off is 7:30. That's the latest information we have, and that to me seems really reasonable. I mean, you were talking about the first game back being El Gran Derby between Sevilla and Betis, and I think that's a great way to kick it off again, and you know, a great advert for La Liga if we want to go back to what they're aiming to do, because it is their opportunity, just as the Bundesliga has had its opportunity to show itself, to say that there is more to La Liga than just Real Madrid versus Barcelona. It's a great way to start it off. It's slated to kick off at 10 o'clock local time. And to my mind, if you look at the health and safety of the players beyond the current situation of COVID-19, just in terms of them being able to get through the games, I don't think you can have games that kick off in Seville much earlier than that, to be honest. It's going to be really, really hot.
It's going to be a tough ask, given the breaks they've had from intense competition as well. It's going to be a really difficult one for them, and they'll have to use their subs carefully and make sure that they take responsible action. I mean, just to come back very, very quickly on your points at the top of that little section about Spanish football and the need for games every day, etc. I've lamented all throughout the season, really, before the pandemic came along and we had to suspend all football. I've lamented the frequency of football. I think it's been far too much. I think there's been no build up to big games and no time for reflection on them afterwards, because we've always been moving on to the next thing.
It's cannibalizing, isn't it?
Absolutely. And there's been several weeks, I think this season, I think I'm right in saying, where there's been a game almost every day, if not every day, then certainly 6 days a week. And I think it's too much. But and here's where I kind of differ from you slightly. I don't know intimately the politics of the Monday night games and the issue around that in Spain. I'm a bit more versed in it when it comes to Germany, and I know that fan groups have been successful in kind of fighting against that and stopping that happening. But I do think this, in special circumstances, you have to commit to it. If you're going to bring the games, you're going to bring the league back, and you're going to try and commit it and finish the season in good order, there's certain situations have to be met and certain circumstances have to be allowed for. I mean, I don't support any kind of land grab by the decision makers in the game as it pertains to grabbing something that wasn't previously on the table and then sticking to it over and above what the special circumstances are. I suspect we'll see a lot of that happening in this country, Andy, particularly as it pertains to the Premier League and the Football League and all the bailouts that are going to be needed there. I don't support that. But broadly speaking, I do support the idea that if you're going to come back in special circumstances, then certain concessions may have to be made. All right, a really interesting story is bubbling up in Netherlands, okay? But first, a quick recap on what the state of football is there at the moment. The season was declared null and void last month after the government announced there will be no sport played again till September the 1st. Now, many of you listening will remember that as we covered it here on the show. As a result, the KNVB, or Dutch FA, awarded Ajax the automatic Champions League spot, while AZ, who were second place at the time, were told they'd have to go through the qualifiers. Now, here's where it gets interesting, you guys. AZ were only second to Ajax on goal difference, and at the time, there were still 9 games left to play. AZ's argument is that they beat Ajax home and away in the league this season, and goal difference isn't an objective differentiator. Of course, some other leagues in Europe go on head-to-head, which would have put AZ top. The KNVB have said they have no plans to change their decision, though, and so AZ have written to UEFA. Andy, this raises a couple of questions, right? The first one is, why do AZ think they're going to get this change given the rules of the competition presumably state that goal difference is the differentiator? And secondly, perhaps more mischievously, are AZ insinuating that Ajax are the fashionable ones, the historic ones, the golden boys of Dutch football, etc., and are so being looked after by the authorities here? I find this an absolutely fascinating story.
Yeah, it is a fascinating story. And I think the way that it's rolled out is really fascinating as well, because if you look at the fact that Edwin van der Sar, the managing director of Ajax nowadays, said, what an unpleasant surprise it was. They didn't know this was coming. So this for them was a really big shock. I mean, I don't really know what AZ wanted to achieve by this, other than drawing attention to what their particular situation is. I think, because equally Ajax could say, okay, well, if that's unfair, the way the season's going to roll out, we've got bigger resources, we've got better players, we probably would have won the league anyway. And I don't think that's an unreasonable argument when you look into...
But you don't know, do you? That's the key.
No, you don't know. You don't know. But I think changing the parameters of what's already happened is ridiculous as well, you know? So I wonder if there's a little bit of tension here from AZ's perspective, because for them it's awfully tricky, isn't it? They're in a situation where they have had an outstanding season that they feel will be relatively unrewarded, because they've got to play four games extra if they're going to get into the Champions League. Four games more than Ajax, I should say. They've got to play six games if they want to get into the Champions League. As stands, we don't know exactly how it's going to roll out in terms of the Champions League once 2021 Champions League starts. But it's the difference between Ajax getting into the playoff round and having to play one home and away tie to qualify, and AZ starting from the second qualifying round, which is a steep climb, isn't it? You know, there's no two ways about that. And that's what made it amazing, really, when Ajax got themselves into the Champions League semi-final, because they come from an awful long way back. For them, it was tough to get into the Champions League, let alone get to the point where they could get into the latter stages of it. Never mind the financials of it. That's playing an awful lot of times to get there.
It's worth pointing out as well that AZ, I mean, to give people a bit of context, because it all does get a little bit confusing, the qualification for the Champions League at this point. There's some difficult games they could play. I mean, they could play in the second qualifying round. I think they could play the Swiss champions. And then in the third qualifying round, they can play. I think there's two teams that are already in that qualification round, the third level, in Rennes and Ghent of Belgium. There's a good chance they'll play a pretty decent Portuguese side as well. So it does make a big difference.
Yeah, it's not a given. It's absolutely not a given. And I think the thing is with them as well, you look at their squad and some of the young players who've been so outstanding for them this season. I'm looking particularly at Myron Boadu, Calvin Stengs. And if you're them, you think, are we going to be able to hold on to them? Especially with the way that the transfer market's recalibrating. You know, maybe like bigger clubs who would have gone to Germany to buy a player will now go to the Netherlands to buy a player. You know, what sort of
and
team are they?
And for Issama Idrissi as well, he's been fantastic. And and presumably he's attracting the interest of other teams as well, because he's got time on this side. He's contributed an awful lot to AZ this season.
That's an exciting
player as well.
Absolutely. So what are they left with going forward? So I can understand that sort of desperation to a certain degree. And, you know, I think it's unrealistic to think that there's not much more politicking behind the scenes than we're currently seeing. And maybe this is one of the first big ones to sort of come to the surface. I guess it's like Marseille, if we're going to go all the way back to the top, not knowing what sort of squad you're going to go into next season with, because they're going to come under enormous pressure to sell, I think. I can understand why they want to make the most out of the situation and try and bank as much as they can. Because the thing is, if you're going into the Champions League playoffs, of course that's not rather than the second qualifying round. That's no guarantee that you're going to get there. It is a guarantee that you're going to be in the Europa League again, which means something. I mean, we talk about how financially the Europa League is far less rewarding than the Champions League. It's rewarding to a club of RZ side and a club in the Eredivisie. So that's something we have to look at. And of course, they've had this quite difficult season in a way because they couldn't even play at home at the start, could they? Because, you know, part of the roof on their stadium collapsed. So when they played Manchester United, they played the home game in Den Haag, which was pretty tough for them. So it's been a really extraordinary season for them one way and another. And I can understand why they want to extract reward for it.
But it sounds to me that as interesting as the story is, Andy, you don't think there's much legs in this anyway.
UEFA just said no. They said no, yeah. And they told Ajax, which is how Ajax found out about it.
Well, listen, it made for a good 5 or 6 minutes content on this show. I found it an interesting story, so that's the name of the game. All right, should we herald with much fanfare the return of Games of the Week? Should we do that?
Yeah, let's do that. And I think
all right.
People,
can I go first?
No, please do.
Yeah, I want to get mine out of the way, really. I just wanted to kind of follow up on what we've been speaking about in terms of Germany this week and in previous weeks. It's worth pointing out that Saturday afternoon sees a titanic clash between probably two of the shittest teams in Europe at the moment. Now, I understand a large part of that will be through default, but nonetheless, Schalke do entertain Werder Bremen. And it will literally, this game, if it goes to form, will literally be like, I know Werder Bremen have been slightly better since the restart, but go with me here. This will be like when a really shit candidate goes on to X Factor and you can't take your eyes off it. So do watch Schalke v Werder Bremen to see. I mean, it's going to be a race to the bottom. Let's be perfectly clear about that. And the interesting aspect to this is I think you have to make Werder Bremen favourites, chiefly because there's two reasons for it. One is because they've been the better side since the restart. Secondly, because the one thing one conclusion we can draw from the German restart is that essentially home advantage is over. It's completely over. I mean, if you take that Fortuna Düsseldorf Schalke game we covered it briefly earlier, that was one of only two home wins in this round of fixtures. And I think there might have only been two at the weekend as well, which is ridiculous to think of. So I think you have to make Werder Bremen big favourites for this game. And I think it could start to usher in the beginning of the end for David Wagner. So I'm going to go for Schalke v Werder Bremen Saturday afternoon at 2:30.
Bottom line is Chico time, right?
100%. But no. But the thing with Chico is, I mean, I don't want to go too drawn out on this, but the thing with Chico is he undoubtedly has some kind of charisma. I think it's actually much more apt to compare them to Wagner, not David Wagner, Wagner from X Factor a number of years ago. And the name is a lovely coincidence as well.
Magnificent. Well, of course, as regular listeners will know, I love a bit of free football, and I know you do too. So if you've not been watching BT Sport and you've been listening on the radio, or if you just fancy a different league and a bit of free football, Lech Poznan versus Legia Warsaw on Saturday night at 7 o'clock on Free Sports, which is now available in HD, as we know. I'm interested to get to know the extra.
You are not under the pay of Free Sports in any capacity.
No, I'm not.
Absolutely love it. It's like you've written your own taglines, marketing taglines for the service.
you know what? I just love a bit of free stuff. It's good, isn't it? I mean,
now in HD, as we know,
I think we can easily make the assumption that everyone's got every football package going, and it's expensive, you know.
That's a fair point. You're a man of the people,
especially the fact that you know the fragmentation of football rights. Maybe eventually that will give the consumer greater choice. For the moment, it just means you need like a ton of subscriptions to watch all the football you want if you want to watch it all. So, I mean, this is a league that a lot of people won't be familiar with, two enormous clubs, and it's free on the telly.
Great stuff. All right, Andy, thank you very much for your company today. As ever, thank you very much to everyone listening along as well. We very much appreciate it. If you get a moment, do check out our Patreon. There's lots of extra content available over there. There'll be a competition as well for Patreon subscribers announced tomorrow on the preview show with Marcus, Jim, Pete and I. Looking forward to that too. If you get a moment as well, do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your pods. It does really help. Thank you very much indeed. Andy, you will obviously be answering European football questions on the mailbag, available to Patreon subscribers as well, won't you? So people should look out for that and get their questions in as well. And all that's left for me to say is thank you very much. Have a great rest of your Thursday and weekend. And we'll speak to you next week. Say goodbye, Andy.
Goodbye.
And it's goodbye from me as well.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
I actually got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad was thinking of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. And then we'll weigh around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.